my bicycle. I want to ride my bike. I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride it where I like.
The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. This is Bicycle Talk, episode number 418, to be broadcast Wednesday, October 23rd, 2024, on WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. Welcome to Bicycle Talk without my friendly co-host, lovely Dr. Fran Storch. She is off to a conference this weekend, I guess, and so she had to work today. Anyway, if you're watching on Facebook Live, feel free to comment, but I may not be able to get right back to you. But please leave your comments below. We should be able to respond in some way. Bicycle Talk is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show, please feel free to comment below, and or you can send me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on WHUS.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. Ron's rant of the week. I know I said it last week, but here we go again. I'm reaching out to my younger audience here. Yeah, believe it or not, just because I'm an old guy doesn't mean I don't have a younger audience, because everyone rides a bike, right? Doesn't everyone ride a bike? Anyway, please vote. If there are those of you out there who feel like it really doesn't matter, you need to think about that. That's not the answer. Please reconsider. Democracy is at a turning point. If you just want to be pushed around and think your voting will not help you or your neighbors, you should be concerned. All of those great new developing bike lanes and multi-use trails are because we all vote. This is about you and your bicycle. The U.S. government's Road Safety Agency is testing Tesla's full self-driving system after getting reports of crashes in low visibility conditions, including one that killed a pedestrian. We'll get to a little bit more of this on the show. Who would have guessed that this could have happened? Anyway, more rants. I couldn't stop from hitting the pole. Here's why e-bike injuries are among Gen Xers and boomers. They're spiking. We'll get to that in the show too. And hey, women, this is a shout out to you. Why are you not racing cross? Project Mayhem Cyclocross put out a huge incentives last weekend to encourage women to race, free entries. That's pretty good. And out of a total registration of 293, the women's Pro 123, 3-4, women's 40 plus, three categories, two starts, three podiums, 21 entries. Really? That's less than 10%. Of total pre-registered riders. Now, this is from the pre-registration numbers. I don't know what happened the day of. There may have been a difference then, but come on. Come on. You go to gravel rides? Why don't you go to a cross race? Cross race is only 45 minutes and you're done. Anyway, that's my rant. I'll move on to more details in the show. And hey, positive side. Hey, Husky fans. Yeah, I know. I'm wearing a UConn. Where is it here? I got to turn this way because I'm backwards on my screen. It's Final Four shirt. Anyway, I know there are some of you out there that ride bikes. So I got to mention it because I sit here right in the heart of UConn territory, otherwise known as the basketball capital of the world. And guess what? We're really, really close. Really close to the season starting. So big shout out to the men's and women's teams. Let's hope for injury-free this year for everyone, please. I got to go to first night the other night on Friday night with my friend John. And gosh, that's fun. That's fun. We got to introduce, you know, they introduced a new team. It's very dramatic. It's very big production and all that. But anyway, it was fun. It was really a lot of fun. So anyway, we'll move on from that. And hey, what's with this weather? Oh my God, we're having almost 80 degree days here up in the Northeast. Now, that doesn't happen every day. Doesn't happen every day in the summer, let alone in the fall, late fall. So here we are approaching our time change, and we're having 80-degree days. Pretty cool. Anyway, if you like to ride a bike, it's a beautiful thing. Anyway, so you can say we can't do it here. How about São Paulo, Brazil? Cut traffic deaths by a third overnight. 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 We'll talk about that more in the show. A decade ago, São Paulo, the largest city in the Americas, suffered from 1,249 annual roadway deaths in mid-2015. The death rate plummeted by one-third. Take notes, America. Hello, there's a way of doing this. Okay, and let's see, what else do I have here on a positive side? Vehicle damage claims in Wales fall 20% since the speed limit was cut to 20 miles per hour, says, guess who? An insurer. Hello, the industry is paying attention. The insurance industry is paying attention over there. Let's pay a little more attention here, and we can talk a little bit more about this in the show also. And let's see, what else is on my positive side? There's always something more, isn't there? Yeah, New York City. Despite the risks, cycling is gaining popularity. New York Times reports that around 450,000 bike trips are made daily across the city's five boroughs, with one in five of those trips being a work commute. Yay, New York City! Hey, pretty cool, huh? So anyway, there are now over 1,000 miles of bike lanes in the city, double what existed a decade ago, and City Bike, which launched, those are the e-bikes that are, they share, bike share all over the city, which launched in 2013, has expanded its membership to approximately 130,000 in recent years. People are riding bikes in New York. Hey, go figure. Makes sense if you've ever sat in New York traffic. Anyway, and then, you know, we won't even get into congestion pricing and all that. I'll leave that alone. And one last thing here on a positive side. This is an opinion. Is Pogacar too good for the sport? We'll talk about that later in the show, too. So, anyway, Mechanical Minute, Ron's Tips of the Week. 9 bicycle commuting mistakes you should avoid. All right. I thought this was kind of a cool thing. Let's see if I can figure out where I hit it. Here it is right here. So we will dive into the show with the tip of the week, which is commuting without tools. You're bound to get a puncture sooner or later, so keep a spare tube, tire levers, pump in hand. A multi-tool is a must-have. Make sure you have all the instruments you need for field maintenance, including even Torx heads. All those disc brakes have torque bolts on them now. And some of the other brakes are putting them on there now, too. So you definitely want to have that. Okay, second mistake. Number 2, cycling in jeans. If you regularly wear jeans to work, you might try traveling in them, but you quickly discover the experience is not really something you want to repeat. You get jeans caught in the chain, you have all sorts of problems there. I mean, you can ride in them and you can wear a cuff around your leg, but and that'll hold it in, but they're just darned uncomfortable. Unless, of course, I have an awesome pair of club ride jeans, and club ride jeans are cycling specific jeans. They're really cool. I'm not here to endorse products. I'm just telling you what I have. That's all. And the beauty of them is they have a lot of spandex in them, kind of like your cycling tights do. And they look like jeans. So you can kind of get away with wearing them to work. That's another thing you can do. So anyway, don't ride with regular jeans. Not great. Really tight, really uncomfortable. Not going to be a good time in general. Okay, number 3 on the list of no-nos, neglecting to recharge your lights. So if you're using lights, all right, which I hope you're using lights if you're commuting, if not to see where you're going, but just to be seen as you're driving your bicycle down the street, especially the flashing ones, which is really, really important. Hey, Pete. Hey, Glenn. Welcome to the show. You might want to make sure that your lights are always charged, because when you start out and your light's not charged, it doesn't really work. So that's not good. So there's another mistake that you can make commuting. Number four on the list, choosing the fastest yet busiest route. Don't do that. Figure it out. Map it out. Find the route that works best for you to get yourself to work. And if it takes you another 10 minutes to do it because you got to go around this bad place and intersection or traffic jam or whatever it is, too much traffic, do it. You'll be safer. You'll be happier. Believe it or not, the people who are driving the cars and trucks will be happier too to not have you there. So, find a safer route. Make sure you do that. And let's see here. Putting the mud guards aside. Yeah, this came from, might have come from a British site. They say mud guards over there. Anyway, if you're going to commute every day on your bicycle, fenders are like huge. They make a big, big difference. They'll keep you dry. They'll keep your feet from getting wet. Yeah, believe it or not, all that splash from the wheels gets to your feet, and your feet get wet, and now you're uncomfortable there, too. It's just put your fenders back on the bike, or keep them on the bike if they came with the bike, or add some if they didn't. It's a beautiful thing. Forgetting your daily outfit. Okay, many of us commute to work wearing cycling gear and carrying spare clothing in a backpack, including a pair of shoes and a jacket. The system works until you forget to pack something. Even if it's uncomfortable, you can get away with forgetting your underwear. But once you arrive pantless, it's an unsolvable problem. So the best advice is always to have an extra pair of clothes at work. Smart. Good thinking. Number seven. Scrimping on a bike lock. Yeah, quality lock. No question about it. Unless you have a very safe place to keep your bike indoors. Talk to your employer about that, by the way. I would, if I was riding my bike to work every day and I was not taking up, road space, parking spaces, etc., I would probably, and also being, happy and healthy and actually productive at work, I would talk to my employer about an indoor space of which I could ride my bike to and then leave it there so I knew it was safe during the day, and then I could go and start up again later when I wanted to leave. So that's what I would do. But if you don't have an ability to do that, and bring a good bike lock. And you know where you want to lock it? Right by the front door. Right there. Right where everybody else can see it. So you, the good commuting cyclist, can make a statement about, this is how I got to work today. And guess what? I didn't sit in traffic like you did. Anyway, riding close to the curb. Many hazards lurk for cyclists, but riding too close to the curb is going to be a problem. If you project the image of the fact that you are so far over to the right-hand side of the road that the driver of the vehicle, the motorized vehicle, can squeeze through, guess who's going to get the squeeze? You're going to get the squeeze. Don't do that. You want to row it right out into the road. Remember, the rule in traffic is to be traffic. If you want to survive in traffic, you must become traffic. And the other thing that I like to put out there, and this is my best way to explain it to people as far as what it's like to commute, is you're not riding your bicycle anymore. You're driving your bicycle. When you think like a car, when you think the way you would if you were in a motorized vehicle and operate that way on the road, everyone is safer. Plus, the cars see you. Anyway, those are my little bike commuting mistakes that you should probably avoid. You want to make sure that you exercise good caution when out there. Please be lit up like a Christmas tree when you're riding your bike down a road. Even though it's not Christmas, it doesn't matter. It's very important to be seen and to be able to see where you're going too at the same time. So anyway, that is that. That is Ron's tip of the week. Okay, what else do we have here? We have next on the show, we from last week's show. So last week we had a piece which I was about to get to, and I didn't get a chance to really dive into it deep enough. But bike-friendly campuses can inspire the rest of car-centric America, and there was a first ever summit. Which this may have happened already, explores what makes college and university bike-friendly and how higher ed can help create a better transportation culture in cities, too. This comes from Streets Blog by Kia Wilson, who writes lots of great stuff for bicycles on Streets Blog. And this is a shout out to the campus that I sit on here at the University of Connecticut, and also all the great work that they're doing. Yay, Corey, doing great work. You really are. Big shout out to Corey, who's putting a lot of effort into making UConn a very bike-friendly campus, which it needed that improvement. But anyway, there is a National Campus Bike Summit. And actually, it was held a couple days ago. It's 17th and 18th of October. And it was the first of a kind event to be to bring together sustainable transportation advocates from across the country to talk about what makes a college or a university hospitable to people on two wheels and how campuses can help catalyze broader change in America's transportation culture. There's lots of summits that look at bicycling from different angles, but there's really never been one that's focused on campuses, said Sandra Broadwell, alternative transportation manager for the University of Kentucky, which is hosting the event. We want to explore how we can better integrate with cities and communities that we're part of, but also how we can make a campus bigger player in the national stage. So let's think about this, little bit of a deep dive into this. If this is promoted heavily at the college level, most college students, I'm not going to say all, most college students will stay on that campus for how many years? 4 years minimum, right? 4 years. So if you're there for 4 years and all of a sudden you get really, really used to the fact that, hey, I can go wherever I want on my bicycle and I can get there faster. And I also can park my bicycle right by the front door where I'm trying to go instead of having to park in a parking garage and then walk 4 blocks to get to where I want to go. It kind of puts it in the brain and it makes you understand that this is an alternative that really works. You're not polluting the atmosphere. You're not using petroleum products other than oiling your chain and, you know, putting new tires on your bike. Those are petroleum products. But your impact, your footprint is really, really, really minimal as far as that goes. Plus, you're healthy, right? You're already healthy. You're young. You're going to college. You must be at least somewhat healthy unless you spent your entire life up to that point, sitting in front of a screen, which many people do, by the way, many people do that, you're probably going to be able to get yourself around and sustain your transportation. It's a low-cost alternative and very simple alternative to transporting yourself. And if it sets the stage for you for 4 years while you're in college, then maybe it'll stick for the rest of your life. All I'm looking for is 10%. I want a 10% scoop. That's all I want. That's asking a lot, I know. But if I could get 10% of the college kids that are currently attending university, all right, to use their bicycles for those 4 years on campus and then continue to use their bicycles once they move on to their, you know, real job into the real world, we could change the world, folks. We really can. I'm always about changing the world by bicycle, so this is definitely a thing we can look at. So the college campuses are now looking at things to do to make it more friendly to ride your bike on campus, like putting in bike lanes, closing off parts of campus to only bicycles. That's a great idea. I love that idea. That really works. But and then maybe also having special facilities in the dorms, maybe downstairs or whatever, in a basement type setting or whatever, that is made to store your bike. So you've got a safe place and a dry place to store your bicycle. Makes a lot of difference. Also, you'll note that a lot of universities which have public transport buses, okay, they'll have racks on the front of the buses. So if they are like our campus here, we have a bus service which runs between two cities. It runs between Willimantic and Storrs, and there's bike racks on them. So if you live off campus, you can actually take the bus up to campus and then ride your bike around campus and then put your bike back on the rack and it'll bring you back home if the bike ride to campus is too difficult for you or too long for you. So when you get bike friendliness right, you can really, really, really change the way people look at bicycling around college campuses. And college campuses are great because they're a closed environment. They tend to be very mini city oriented. So they kind of set the dynamic for the idea of infrastructure change and the ability to use something that's way more friendly, both physically, mentally, and environmentally, to the commuter and the person who is involved with it. Because remember, without bicycles, we have no people. Without people, we have no bicycles. It's like people ride bicycles. This is important. It's an important thing to take a look at. So if you are on a college campus and you happen to be listening to this today, I would strongly encourage you to get involved with your student government and encourage more bicycle-friendly areas on campus and commutability on campus, whatever it needs to be, to make it safer to be there on your bicycle. Because bikes on sidewalks don't work for me. They just don't work for me at all. A bicycle does not belong on a sidewalk, and I see too many of them on sidewalks, especially here at this university. And it's like they have wheels. They belong in the road. I'll say the same thing about scooters and other various methods of transportation. I'm not a big fan of anything that is faster than pedestrian speed on sidewalks, period. So anyway, let's make those changes. Make it so that if you feel that it's too dangerous to ride your bicycle on the road on campus, then maybe something needs to be changed, like the speed limit perhaps. Anyway, we'll get to that in a little while. We'll talk a little bit more about that because I've got another angle on the show here today that I will talk to you about that. So they're looking into, there's other things that can happen on college campuses that work really, really good. Bike share programs are wonderful. They work really, really good. A lot of those bike share programs include e-bikes. So if you don't feel you have the ability to get yourself around campus, the e-bike helps you manage that properly. And then when you move into a city like New York, where you got the city bikes that are there, 130,000 units in New York City alone, 130,000. So you don't need a car. You can get around on the bicycle. And the campuses, the college campuses, four-year programs, right? Campus is a place where you learn. It's college is a place where you learn all about all sorts of things in life, in business, in whatever it is that you're studying. But if you incorporate the bicycle into that, we can only go in great places. Good morning, Kevin. Good morning, Billy. Nice to have you on the show today. So anyway, that's it. That's my little college campus thing, which I was going to cover last week, but we ran out of time. So here we go. Now it's off my list. All right. So we did that. I couldn't stop it from hitting the pole. Here's why e-bike injuries among Gen Xers and boomers are spiking. So I, because I couldn't download it, I have a PDF on this, so I'm switching myself over to this. Oh gosh. This was sent to me by my friend Pete and listener Pete, who likes to listen to our show here. And it came from, I think, the Boston Globe. Maybe it was. I think it was Boston Globe. Anyway, an emergency room physician, Dr. Ali Raja, is among the first to witness new injuries in mundane and exotic from that land people in the hospital. One of the most noticeable, more noticeable recent trends is the rising number of middle-aged road warriors hobbling in after accidents on electric bikes, often looking sheepish. E-bike sales have soared since the early days of the pandemic, and when legions of co-opt souls were searching for outdoor activities, or cooped up souls were searching for outdoor activities, with that has become a very major spike in injuries, recent research shows. Since early 2021, riders between the age of 45 and 64, Gen Xers and the youngest of the baby boomers, suffered the fastest growing rate of e-bike injuries, according to a new study from researchers at Columbia University's Mailman School of Public Health. These riders also have a higher overall rate of these injuries than other age groups. Okay, so here's how it all works. They'll walk out of a building and they'll see one of those city bike rentals. You know, it's like right there. You got an app, you go in, you pay for it, you get on the bike, and you go. And go, oh, I'll use one of these. I'll ride this around town, but I haven't been on a bike in 30 years. Not a good idea. But, you know, bad decisions are made daily by human beings. That's why we're human. So e-bikes are becoming more and more available when you get into city situations, and they're really convenient and they really do make a lot of sense. So more and more people are just hopping on them and giving it a try. And, you know, if you have a first very successful ride across town and you're able to park the bike at another park share station and everything went really well, well, good for you. That's a great thing. It's a big discovery moment and it's really wonderful. But if you are not used to riding a bicycle, especially in traffic, and or riding a bicycle that has power that will give you the ability to go faster than maybe you really should be going, you can get yourself in a whole bunch of trouble. So you got to be super, super careful when you pick up one of these bikes. The one thing I have noticed when I see people get on their first e-bike is this big grin on their face, because, you know, it's like, wow, hey, this is kind of cool. I can get on this bike and I can ride it and it's not difficult to do. So you get this encouraged sense of, I'm going to say courage, and you become now the, you know, invincible bike rider that can ride anywhere they want. But you know what? You still have to be careful. You still have to, like I said earlier in the show, you still have to drive the bicycle when you're in traffic, which means you have to operate your e-bicycle like it is a motorized vehicle, because it sort of is a motorized vehicle. So the total injury rates among the age groups for the powered scooters were up by 88%. For e-bikes, a stunning 293%. While powered scooter injuries appeared to be tapering off among most age groups, the rate of e-bike injuries kept climbing. The bulk of e-bike injuries, 49%, were riders in the 18 to 44-year-old category. So, anyway, this is what's going on. You've got a few things to realize with an e-bike. Number one, you've got power. Okay? Number two, The bike's heavy. It's real heavy. It's got a battery on it. The battery adds extra weight onto the bicycle. And top speeds of 20 miles per hour are pretty common on these. Some of them will reach speeds. A Class 3 e-bike will reach a speed of 28 miles per hour, which you do have to check and make sure that that is, you know, legal in your state. Also, that is the thing. Because some e-bike riders actually modify their e-bikes to speeds that go well above 30 miles per hour, which is approaching that of a motorcycle. And that's when everything changes. You know? And here's the big thing. Yeah, also, not only, and I talk about this when I talk about people that drive gigantic trucks too, it's not a fact that you can go super fast in them. You have to be able to stop them too. Super important that you can stop when you need to stop. And when you add that much more weight and that much more speed onto the bicycle, and maybe the bicycle wasn't really intended to go that fast, you can get yourself in a lot of trouble really, really fast. And you get to meet our friend at the emergency room. And they get to tell you, oh gosh, we see you people all the time. Why don't you just slow down? Well, anyway, yeah. There's only so much we can do. We can only preach so much. So anyway, you know, you got to wear a bike helmet. It makes a lot of sense. If you're going to be an e-biker and you're going to be using a bike share program, make sure you have a suitable helmet for it that you just, you know, clip it onto the back of your backpack or whatever so that you can, you know, use the helmet when you need it, because riding it without the helmet is not such a good idea. Head injuries are a number one problem with these crashes. So you definitely want to pay attention to using a helmet and getting used to the fact that you have to have a helmet on. If you're in Massachusetts, Massachusetts law requires helmets for motorized bikes that travel faster than 25 miles per hour. Seems like I should use it for all, but that's okay. Anything that goes faster than 25 miles an hour, you have to have a helmet. That's all there is to it. So the 44% injured e-bikes reported wearing a helmet, with proportionally fewer wearing helmets each year. Researchers from the California University of California, San Francisco, found in a nationwide study. So the incident of head trauma from e-bike accidents in 2022 reported by hospitals was approximately 49 times higher than in 2017, increasing from approximately 163 reported head injuries to approximately 7,922 nationally. Wow, staggering numbers. So helmet laws for e-bikes vary widely among states. So you really need to check your state and see what the requirements are. But rather than checking your state and seeing what the requirements are, just wear the helmet. That's a no-brainer, so to speak. So, you know, the fact that you would get on a bicycle that has more power than you're able to generate yourself, and more speed than you're able to generate yourself, and you wouldn't wear a helmet, baffles me. That's all I can say. And then there's the other things that can happen. I mean, you know, the number one injury of cyclists, anybody who's listening to my show probably knows what that is. It's the clavicle. It's the collarbone. Collarbone injuries are huge. Why? Because when you fall, you tend to fall to your side. When you fall to your side, sometimes you'll put your hand out to stop the fall, cushion the fall, whatever. It takes 18 pounds of pressure to break this thing. Not a whole lot when you look at it. Add some force, add some speed, boom, down you go. Pop goes the collarbone. So it's a big time number one injury for a cyclist. And almost everyone has done it. I don't remember doing it, but my chiropractor told me once that I did. And I refused to admit that I had ever broken my collarbone until he took my hand and put it up on my collarbone and said, "You feel that lump right there?" And I went, "Yeah, I feel that lump right there." He goes, "You broke your collarbone." He goes, "That's what happens. It heals and you get a lump right where the heel is, because that's how your bone heals itself." And I said, well, I don't ever remember breaking my collarbone. I never went to that. And he said, how could you not know that you broke your collarbone? You know, I raced bikes for 10 years. Things happen. You get back up, you go again. You got to go to work the next day. Yeah, you know, who knows? I have no idea. But anyway, it can happen. So it can also be very life-threatening. So you do have to be careful, of course, to... you just got to be careful no matter what. Whether you're driving a car, whether you're riding a bicycle, whether you're walking, it doesn't matter. You need to keep your eyes open and you need to be very, very defensive about the way that you approach transportation. Simple, right? All right. So let's move on to other crazy things going on out there. The U.S. government's Road Safety Agency is investigating Tesla's full self-driving system after getting reports of crashes in low visibility conditions, including one that killed a pedestrian. Oh, boy. Anyway, yeah, fog apparently is a problem for the cameras on self-driving cars. They can't see certain things. And two of those things that they can't see really well are bicycles and pedestrians. So there's a big probe going out right now by the U.S. government, the safety, they're trying to figure out what's going on here. And this is that autonomous vehicle thing that I have been skeptical about for a number of years now, especially on this program. You've heard me talk about them and my fear of them. My fear of them is not necessarily for the passenger inside the vehicle. My fear of them is for everything that's outside of the vehicle. And that is where things can go really, really bad, really, really fast. And so anyway, it's being investigated now by the U.S. government because apparently it's happened more than once. So here we go. And eventually the insurance industry will get involved with it because they'll have so many lawsuits on them because of people being hit by these vehicles that they're going to need to investigate it because the actuaries at the insurance company say, you know what? This is a problem. This is definitely a problem. But what can I say? Let's move on to something else here. I just find it to be crazy that we have to even be having these kind of conversations. But we do. So let's go to something I talked about earlier, and that was how Sao Paulo in Brazil cut its traffic deaths by a third overnight. Okay, here we go. It's going to be the simple thing that I've been talking about for weeks and weeks on end here, but a decade ago, the largest city in the Americas suffered 1,249 annual roadway deaths and 20 times as many injuries. Per capita, the rate of traffic violence twice as high of that of Los Angeles, California. In mid-2015, however, the death rate in Sao Paulo plummeted by a third and stayed down. To achieve this, the municipality simply cut speed limits, enforcing them with an existing system of cameras. It's not rocket science, folks. Slow down. And I didn't say what I really wanted to say because this is a radio show. I'm on public radio, and I can't put that expletive into it. But anyway, please just slow down. No city can expect zero traffic deaths as it lays out the streets like raceways and treats people on foot as obstacles. But still, that still largely describes Sao Paulo, which has over 4 million cars circulating within city limits. It remains about 900 annual deaths away from the zero in Vision Zero. However, with nearly 12 million residents today, the annual death rate is 7.5 per 100,000 people, down from 11 in 2014. Speed cameras have indeed helped Sao Paulo push its fatality rate below that of Los Angeles, where cameras have been forbidden until recent state law and fatalities have been rising. Brazil overall is not known for careful driving. Its overall annual traffic death rate is 15.7 per 100,000 inhabitants. Ouch. About 15% higher than that of the U.S., and which it has the worst record by far among the world's advanced economies. Brazil only has half as many cars per capita as the U.S., so its fatality rate really reveals a severe problem. But this is how they did it. They slowed traffic down. They started ticketing people with cameras, using license plates as the tool of which to do that. And people had to slow down. When they slowed down, guess what happened? Their traffic deaths went down. It's not about even, you know, as much as I complain about the size of the vehicles that are out there on the road today, it's not really as much about that as it is how fast they're going. They're just going way too fast, way, way, way too fast. And that is where the problems occur, is when you start exceeding the limits that were posted on the road in the first place. And it just, remember, that great big mass of weight still has to stop. It still has to have some sort of control. And when you go too fast, you don't have that kind of control. So that's how they did it. They lowered it. They lowered the, they started enforcing the low speed limits. And the low speed limit was, get this, hang on tight, it's one I talk about all the time, 20 miles per hour in the city in highly congested areas. Haven't you heard me talk about this on the show before? I think you have. 20 miles per hour. It will save lives. It does save lives. It's been proven to save lives. I will feel much safer when I'm out riding my bicycle in a city atmosphere and or anything that's any kind of busy, including right here at the University of Connecticut. I will feel much, much safer if everyone is just going 20 miles per hour, but they don't. They don't, they don't, they don't. Even the speed limit on the main artery that goes through UConn campus, which is Connecticut State 195, all right? The speed limit going through campus is anywhere from 25 to 30 miles per hour. Too fast. Too fast. If I go 25 miles an hour through that campus, and I generally will use, when I'm using my motorized vehicle, I will put my car on cruise control at that speed, I will have so many impatient drivers behind me. They get really annoyed. And all I'm doing is the speed limit. I was on a back road last week, and because I also work for a program called Farm to Families Program for Human Services in town, and I was delivering some food to one of our clients, and I was going 35 miles an hour on a 30 mile an hour road, which is somewhat heavily traveled. It's a back road. And I was 5 miles an hour over the speed limit, and I had someone trying to find out what the inside of my exhaust pipe looked like. And unfortunately, I drive an electric vehicle. There is no exhaust pipe, but that's how close they were. And they were really, really inspecting the back end of my car very, very closely. Obviously, very annoyed that I was only going 5 miles an hour over the speed limit when they did find an opportunity to pass me in a no passing zone. And they took that risk, and I'm fine. Take the risk. Go for it. They went by with and they were a bird mobile. There were two birds coming out of both the driver's window and also the passenger window, or as I love to call them, the IQ salute. Anyway, just slow down. Just slow down. They were students. I'll point the finger right where the finger really needed to be pointed. And they were students, and they were driving like, you know, teenagers. But what do you expect? Anyway, that's that is the way to solve the problem. Lower the speed. It's not about anything other than the speed. The speed is how you make people drive safer. And I will rant this on and on and on every show. You're going to hear it. But right now, I got to move on to something else because, you know, there's always more to talk about on Bicycle Talk than I have time for. So today, we're going to go back down to the good old bicycle racing page, and we're going to talk about so this was an opinion article that was written. Opinion: is Pogacar too good for the sport? Well, we certainly know that Tadej Pogacar has just been ripping it up, and you know, there is it really is amazing how much he has won this year. He is on a roll. People are starting to compare him to the great Eddie Merckx. I have something to talk about that too. Hopefully I will have time for it. But really, is Pogacar too good for the sport? No. Sometimes, you know, you bring out people that are exceptional in the sport. They really draw a lot of attention to the sport. I look at a lot of different things. Little shout out, off subject here, to women's basketball and women's sports. All of a sudden, this year, women's sports have gone way up, boom, because people are watching. People are watching. It's gaining popularity. There are some superstars out there. Big shout out to New York Liberty, by the way, for winning the WNBA championships. And Breonna Stewart, we love you, Stewie. We loved you when you were here at UConn, and we love you now. It's just great. It was a good thing. And it was fun to see all the former UConn players that were in that game on both sides. So that's kind of fun to see too. But anyway, if you are in the spotlight, people are going to watch, and they're going to watch because they want to know, you know, when is this guy going to crack? When is this girl going to crack? How far can they go? And it becomes kind of a fun thing to check out and see. And sometimes they don't crack, and they just go and they have stupendous years like Tadej Pogacar had. And how can you not like watching that? It's fun to watch, and the explosive attacks that he makes, and the I mean, he's just, even the other people on the other teams are shaking their heads when he goes. It's like, how can he go now? I got no legs left, and there he goes. So it pretty much goes for any other sporting event as well. When there is someone that is big, remember Pele in soccer? If you go back in time, I'm dating myself. I hate to bring this up, but I gotta, because it was in the news the last couple of days. How about Arnold Palmer? Anyway, I'm not going to go any further. I'm just going to leave it right there. And, you know, people like Tiger Woods, okay? There's a golfer, okay? When they're on a winning streak, people start watching. They start watching a lot. So people are watching Tadej Pogacar because he's winning a lot of things. And the question is that good or bad for the sport? Well, I have the answer. I can tell you right now, it is great for the sport. It really is good for the sport because it makes people who may not watch the sport a little closer, or maybe flip a channel or whatever. Remember flipping channels? Remember that? No, I'm turning a dial. There's my age showing. Right. That would mean I would have had to get up from the couch also to do that. Just to, you know, jar your memory here a little bit about before we had, you know, clickers, as we all call them now, remote controls. Anyway, I regress. Anyway, but, you know, you might want to just flip the channel just to see, that's that bike racing thing. I've heard about this guy. You know, he's in the news. He's on the front page of the sports sections. He's out there in places that you may not normally see him. Maybe you're an avid cyclist. You're not really into bicycle racing, but because you happen to have all these different things you attend to online, someone has marketed you and you'll have his name come across, or something will drive you or guide you to maybe even a short clip YouTube video to, enhance your interest in the whole sport. Yeah, I think it's good for the sport. I think it's really good for sport. Which brings me to, Pagaccia says, I'm not the new Merckx, but the cannibal himself disagrees. Yes, Eddie Merckx, the cannibal. Yeah, the greatest name in cycling ever, still to this day, at this time. Eddie Merckx has talked about Tadej Pogačar as possibly being the next greatest cyclist in the world. So I've heard it many times. This is the new Merckx without conditions being fulfilled. But with Tadej, I think we really are there this time, Merckx said, according to a blog he was writing on. He's 23 and has already won the Tour de France twice. Incredible. Obviously, this was a few years ago. He's 26 now. Tadej is only at the beginning of his career. I think he can do better than me in some races. He is, at this time, once again, 3 years ago, 23 years old. He has already won the Tour de France twice and 30 races. That is unbelievable. At 24, I had not even won the Tour. He is still at the beginning of his career, and I think he is doing better than me in some races. He is a great champion, and we are going to enjoy him for many years to come. Eddie's not wrong. We have been enjoying him for many years to come. He's still at it. He still is a phenomenon, and he still is just kind of an amazing guy to watch race his bike. So over his 18-year career, Merckx won no fewer than 525 times, winning the Tour de France five times, the Giro d'Italia five times, the Vuelta a España once. He won 34 stages of the Tour, 24 in the Giro, and was world champion three times. Merckx also excelled in the classics, winning Milan-San Remo seven times, Liège-Bastogne-Liège five times, the Paris-Roubaix three times, and the Tour of Flanders twice. Pogačar said it would be difficult to equal such a wide-ranging record. Many have told me that I am the new Merckx, but it's impossible to win everything he has won, he said. But Merckx disagrees. So Eddie is a total racer, and he's won everywhere. It will be difficult for me to win Milan-San Remo once, let alone seven like he did. I certainly like to win, but I also know how to accept defeat. Every race I participate in, I try to make my mark, even if it's a simple criterium in Slovenia. I believe it is the nature of every cyclist. Merckx pointed to Pogačar's breakthrough performance at the Vuelta a España in his first pro season in 2019 as the moment he realized that the Slovenian's talents were there. I already understood that he had something special when in his first year as a professional he had won three stages of the Vuelta, the last of which attacking 37 kilometers from the finish with all the Movistar team chasing behind. The Movistar team is a big Spanish team. And then this year at the Tour in the stage Le Grand Bonhomme, he destroyed all the competition by trimming minutes after minutes. So, yeah, what do you think? Better than Merckx? Merckx thinks maybe better than Merckx. So, we'll see. I thought that was kind of cool. That was kind of a neat little article to find. And, you just never really know. You never really know. I got one last thing I'm going to finish the show off with because I got 2 minutes to do it. And I'm going to come back to this next week because this is, again, a piece which I had a little out of place here. I meant to talk about this earlier. Vehicle damage claims in Wales fell 20% since the speed limit was cut to 20 miles per hour. Who said this? An insurance agency. We'll talk about that one next week. This is a big deal. It goes all back to the same thing I'm constantly preaching here. 20 miles per hour, please. If there's a crosswalk, it's 20 miles an hour. Period. No questions asked. Speed cameras everywhere. Tickets flying crazy. Slow down, America. Please slow down. Our lives depend on it. So anyway, let's move on. I'm not supposed to get too opinionated on the show, but I sure do get opinionated on the show. I can't help myself. Let's move on here. And I'm going to talk about real quick, like Another One Bites the Dust. We just lost another bike shop in North Portland in Oregon. Bike shops are starting to fall apart right and left. We see them closing down right and left. Please support your local bicycle shop. Please support your local bike shop. We want them to be there. If they aren't there, you can't get your bike fixed. If you can't get your bike fixed, you won't ride your bike. This is simple. Support your local bicycle shop. Please. They work really hard. They're very passionate about what they do. They're very passionate about the sport. And they actually know what they're doing, at least most that I've seen do. So please support your bike shop. We're tired of seeing these numbers crumble, and it's happening pretty regularly. So anyway, support your local bike shop, please. Anyway, let's finish this up and go to events. Our events page is... very simply, we have Project Mayhem Cyclocross Series, which had a race last weekend in Portland, Connecticut. It was the Belltown race, and they had very good attendance this time, and so that was really nice to see. We have two more races in the series on November 17th in Wallingford and on December 1st in Guilford, Connecticut. There's also a race coming up in Massachusetts called the Treehouse Cross race, and it's huge, it's big, it's fun. If you want to get some entertainment in watching a good cross race, that's a good way to go. So, finishing points, elections. Yes, I know I keep talking about this, but they're important to you as a cyclist. Check out that League of American Cyclists site and check out and see what they have to say. There's ways that you can get involved politically. And college campuses, let's change the world. This is it. 4 years pounded into your head that getting around on your bicycle is the way to go. Oh my God, we could change so much so easily. Just ride your bike, please. Just ride your bike. So anyway, 2024. What's your goal here? More miles, ride and commute to work or around town, better fitness, or simply enjoying bicycle rides you take more by slowing down and smelling the roses? I'll say it again, it won't be my last time. You gotta get loud. Get active. Our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic, dangerous roads, the price of gas, and the lack of places to safely ride, and ride your bicycle. It's a good thing. And hey, take that Pedal and Run challenge. Consider parking the car for a day and ride your bike instead. You just might surprise yourself. The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is, you have been listening to Bicycle Talk without my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. She's off at work today. If you're watching on Facebook Live, please feel free to comment, or you can send me an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. If you'd like to contribute information to the show, just drop me an email. This is Pedalin' Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. Save mine. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org. Thank you so much for listening. See you next week. Get on your bike.